They were inferior to us. So we were Americans. We were the civilized people, and you know, they, we didn't give a shit about those people.
Okay, the
Mr. Eckert, you stated that you witnessed an old Vietnamese woman shot by security guards in Quang Tri province. Could you elaborate and tell us if she was a VC, a civilian, or?
I was up in Quang Tri visiting a friend of mine who was on security, which is like a rat patrol. They go out in these little jeeps and patrol the perimeter. And we were out about 5 o'clock in the morning, just about coming in, when they spotted this old woman about, she looked about 50, but she probably was about 25. And she was running across some trees, and everyone in the jeep, you know, no one was supposed to be out there, of course. It was not a free fire zone, but from the hours from dusk to dawn, there's not supposed to be anybody out there. And if there is, you're supposed to stop them, check them out, and then eliminate them if you have to. So these guys decided that they would kind of play a little game. And they'd let her run about 50 yards, and they'd fire in front of her so she'd have to turn around. And then they'd let her run another direction, and then they'd cut her off. And this went on about a half hour until the time the sun started to come up. So then they decided they'd, you know, best eliminate her as soon as possible. So they just ripped her off right there. And then the guy, the corporal that was in charge, he decided they better check her out for an ID card just to be safe about it. And they went over, and of course she didn't have an ID card, she didn't have anything. And her only crime was being out, probably tending to her buffalo before the time she should have been. And these guys just took it upon themselves to waste her.
What was the general attitude of the men in your unit toward the Vietnamese? Was this a common experience?
I think the feeling was pretty widespread that these people were inferior to us. And based on the training we received, these people were not looked upon as even humans. They were just, if they had slanted eyes, they were the enemy, and like the only good one was the dead one. And that was for the majority of the people in my unit, that was the only way they looked at them.
Okay. Mr. Bishop, you've stated in your testimony that you witnessed your commanding officer killing a prisoner. Could you go into that a little bit, please?
Right. That's let's see. This had been on operation in Quang Nam Province between August and September of '69. We had just gone on a search and destroy mission in the mountains, and we made no contact. We were on our way back, and we knew of enemy in the area, and there was a lot of rock formations where we were, and we were checking out the bunkers and the holes and everything in the rocks. And we came across a wounded prisoner who was a wounded Vietnamese, and he appeared to be the VC or NVA. He didn't have a weapon. There were a few grenades and rounds laying around him. He seemed to be in this hole for quite a few days. One of his legs was broken in half, and the maggots had already gotten into one of his legs, and they were living inside of his leg. He was still alive. Well, we dragged him out, and we had quite a distance to go down the mountain to get back to the base camp. And the squad that found him had to report him to the skipper. So the skipper came down to where they had found the prisoner, had asked the people around him to get going and that he would tend to the prisoner. And I was a machine gunner at the time, and I had to set up some security around him. And I came up over a rock to watch what he was doing, and he took out his .45 and he blew his head off. And this wasn't really the first time that this ever happened. This happened quite a few times during this operation, because we were working in the mountains. Any POWs that we had, it was really hard to get them back down the mountains, and it was the general consensus of everyone that there would be no POWs, that any people that we did find would be KIAs, and they were reported as such. They weren't reported as POWs.
Do you know of many instances where, say, medevac choppers were called in to bring out wounded Vietnamese, be they NVA, VC, or civilians?
Very few times. I hardly saw any medevacs at all taking out wounded Vietnamese civilians or Vietnamese prisoners.
Okay.
Usually we didn't have any prisoners. The prisoners were exterminated.
Right. Mr. Sachs, you were a helicopter pilot. Did you fly many medevac missions?
I flew probably 500 medevac missions in the course of 13 months. I can't recall ever evacuating a Vietnamese civilian. Allied with this, there were times at night in bad weather during the monsoon season, we would not launch a night medevac unless it was an emergency. And there were instances where a frag would come in, my co-pilot would go out to start the aircraft while I took down the numbers to get to the zone correctly. And the major, the operations officer of the squadron, would say, now hold it a minute. It's bad weather out there and you're gonna get your ass killed. And these are only orphans. These aren't Americans. These are gook Marines. We don't need them. We're not gonna risk ourselves for them. And we would try to fly the mission anyway.
You would try and fly.
But it was a squadron policy, unwritten, not to launch for gooks, if you could possibly avoid it.
Okay, Mr. Bangert, there's an incident here where you found crucified bodies hanging on barbed wire fences. And in the same incident, a witness, South Vietnamese civilian shot without provocation along Highway 1. Could you go into this and kind of see how they're related?
Pull a microphone up, please.
I can cover a couple of these at the same time. The first day I got to Vietnam, I landed in Da Nang Air Base. From Da Nang Air Base, I took a plane to Dong Ha, got off the plane, and hitchhiked on Highway 1 to my new unit, I was picked up by a truckload of grunt Marines with two company grade officers, first lieutenants. We were about 5 miles down the road where there were some Vietnamese children at the gateway of the village, and they gave the old finger gesture at us. It was understandable that they picked us up from the GIs there. They stopped the truck. Well, they didn't stop the truck. They slowed down a little bit. And it was just like response. The guys got up, including the lieutenants, and just blew all the kids away. There was about 5 or 6 kids blown away there. And then the truck just moved, continued down the hill. That was my first day in Vietnam. As far as the crucified bodies, they weren't actually crucified. They were with nails, but they would find VCS or something. I never got the story on them, but anyway, they were human beings, obviously dead. And they would take them and string them out on fences, on barbed wire fences, stripped. And sometimes they would take flesh wounds, take a knife and cut the body all over the place to make it bleed and look gory as a reminder to the people in the village. Also, in Quang Tri City, I had a friend who was he was working with USAID. And he was also with CIA. We used to get drunk together, and he used to tell me about his different trips into Laos on Air America Airlines and things. And one time he asked me would I like to accompany him to watch. He was an advisor with an Arvin group and Kid Carson's. He asked me if I would like to accompany him into a village that I was familiar with to see how they act. So I went with him, and when we got there, the Arvins had controlled the situation. They didn't find any enemy, but they found a woman with bandages. So she was questioned by 6 Arvins, and the way they questioned her was, since she had bandages, they shot her. She was hit about 20 times. So after she was questioned, of course dead, this guy come over who was, and knowing him, he was a former major. He was in the service for 20 years, and he got hungry again and came back over working with USAID, AIDS International Development. And he went over there and ripped her clothes off and took a knife and cut from her vagina all the way up, well, just about up to her breast, and pulled her organs out completely out of her cavity and threw them out. And then he stopped and knelt over and commenced to peel every bit of skin off her body and left her there as a sign for something or other. And that was those instances.
Okay, there were American officers present when this happened, or
there were two super secret, I know there were field grade officers who were with MACV in Quang Tri province in the area. They knew about it.
Right. Mr. Bruneau, I believe you mentioned something earlier, a massacre of women and children in March, late March, early April 1968. Could you go into that a little bit, please?
Yes, well, I was with 2nd Battalion, 27th Marines, attached to them with Battalion FSCC.
And they had which is the Fire Control Center?
Right. It okay. coordinates everything for the battalion, artillery and troop movement and everything. And I had some spare time this particular day, so I had left the compound and went to a bridge where people usually go and swim, and they had a detachment on this bridge. And all in total, it was about two platoons of people, a second lieutenant in charge of the bridge, and a gunnery sergeant that was staff NCO of the bridge. There was people from mortars platoon, weapons platoon. There was a tank. There were a couple of mules with 106 Recoilless rifles, two snipers, and assorted machine gun crews. And this particular day, I was going to go swimming, and I was at this bridge, and they had sent a patrol out from our battalion CP, and they had gone north of the CP for about a half a mile or a mile, and there was a few huts that comprised a small village north of the compound, and the bridge got a radio call that they'd supposedly received a sniper round from this village. So the lieutenant on the bridge told them to sweep the ville. So they swept the ville, and they called back that there was nothing found. There was just, there was nothing found. I mean, just people were in the ville, and so the lieutenant told them to burn the ville. So I, from my position, which was about 150, 200 yards away, and there was a tree line in the way, there was like smoke started coming up over the tree line. And about this time, I guess about 3 minutes after the smoke started showing, there was a lot of screaming and just chaos coming from the village, from the direction of the village. And a lot of people started running out of the tree line. And from where I was standing, I saw maybe two or three male villagers, and the rest were women and children. Some of the children walking, some of them young enough to be carried, I would say under a year maybe. And the last thing I heard as a command was the gunnery sergeant told them to open fire to keep them back. And I mean, their village was on fire, and they were in panic. They didn't stop, and so they just cut down the women and children with mortars, machine gun, tank. Snipers were...
There was a tank there also?
Yes. The tank, the 90 millimeter gun wasn't used because, I mean, it was too close to range, but they used the 50 and the 30 off the tank. And all the troops that were at the bridge with M16s, the officer, lieutenant, a few got close enough to where he used his 45. They used a few frag hand grenades.
The 50 caliber, that was used specifically against the people?
Yes, yes.
Right. Just for general information, the 50 caliber machine gun is specifically forbidden to be used against people. It's an anti-vehicular weapon.
Yes. Right. Yes, it was used in automatic and single fire against human beings.
There are many different types of ways that we've heard of people being mutilated, of villagers being killed, but there's one way that affects the people afterwards. It isn't, they don't physically shoot them or hurt them at the moment, and this is the use of chemicals. And Mr. Bangert, I think, has a good example here where he shows 20 deformed babies resulting from Agent Orange defoliant spray. Could you tell us what Agent Orange is and the type of deformity that was the result?
I used to work with the pacification program in Vietnam, and I traveled extensively through Quang Tri province, and specifically in the area of Quang Tri City in West. If you want to get it down, it's Triaphong District in that area. I saw approximately during my tour 20 deformed infants under the age of one. It never made sense to me, although it was congenital or something from the neural disease, because they had flippers and things. And I didn't understand what I saw until approximately 6 months ago. I read a report that was put out by Stanford that talked about the thalidomide content within Agent Orange. And it was common knowledge that Agent Orange was sprayed in the area. And we used to see it about every 3 to 4 days in where I was in Quang Tri province. And if I could get back to the Vietnamese woman I saw that was mutilated so horribly by that person, it didn't really shock me, because I think I talked about my first day in Vietnam. You can check with the Marines who've been to Vietnam. Your last day in the States, the staging battalion at Camp Pendleton, you have a little lesson, and it's called the rabbit lesson, where the staff NCO comes out and he has a rabbit, and he's talking to you about escape and evasion and survival in the jungle. And he has this rabbit, and then in a couple of seconds, everyone just about falls in love with it. Not falls in love with it, but, you know, they're humane there. He cracks it in the neck, skins it, disembowels it, just like I testified that this happened to a woman. He does this to a rabbit, and then they throw the guts out in the audience. And you can get anything out of that you want, but that's your last lesson you catch in the United States before you leave for Vietnam. But they take that rabbit, and they kill it, and then they skin it, and they play with its organs as if it's trash, and they throw the organs all over the place, and then these guys are put on the plane the next day and sent to Vietnam.
Mr. Camille, you have testimony here of napalm being dropped on villagers. Could you go into this and kind of let us know what napalm is and how it was used and any of the results?
I really don't know that much about what it is or what it's made of. I just know that when it gets on you, it burns, and when they drop it from the planes, they usually drop two big canisters of napalm at a time. And it just burns everything up, including the people. And many times we've called in air before we go into a village. Or if we have a village where we've lost people because of booby traps, we call in napalm, and it just burns down the village and the people.
Wasn't it usually normal to, or so-called operating procedures, you don't fire until fired on? And on these villages, did you usually receive a lot of fire from them of the type that would say, well, we can't take the village, you have to call in napalm?
No, most of the time it was for safety. We'd napalm it first before we'd even go in, just to make sure we wouldn't lose any men, without any fire whatsoever. It was just for our protection, supposedly.
Thank you. Mr. Nienke, it says here that you used CS grenades clearing bunkers and hooches. Could you tell us if these were enemy bunkers and hooches, or if they were civilian bunkers or hooches, or just exactly what was the incident?
I think every person that was in Vietnam was in the infantry used CS, which is a gas, chemicals, Willy Peter, that's white phosphorus. And we used these sometimes to clear bunkers and other times to destroy a hooch. We used to think that it was kicks to, there'd be people in a hooch or something like this. We'd throw in a gas grenade and they'd cough and then we'd leave and then probably, and other times we used to use, we had mortar squads in the infantry, used to avoid going to a village or something. If we thought it might be VC infested or something like this, we'd send in Willy Peter mortars, 60 millimeters, and this would burn up the hooches that explode, throwing white phosphorus on different hooches in the village, start the hooches burning, and also kill people. It's probably one of the worst sights I've ever seen is a person that's been burned by Willy Peter, because it doesn't stop. It just burns all completely through your body. The only way you can end this burning is to cut off the air. It's very difficult.
I'd like to add that white phosphorus is not a personnel, is not supposed to be used for personnel. It's supposed to be used for marking and in artillery for spotting. But as you know, that these rules aren't too well followed most of the time.
Ms. Olympiera, you were in the same unit. You were Mr. Nyanke's squad leader. This normally went on to, who was in charge of calling in on the mortars or ordering the throwing of the CS grenades?
Well, it was usually the officers, but I can remember times where we'd be sitting up on a hill, Nick and myself, and...
Can you speak into the mic, please?
And they used to have these things called pop-ups. You hit them on the bottom and it shoots like a green star cluster up in the air. It's used to for location when you want to find, when someone wants to find out where you are. And we used to shoot them down into the village that was below the thing and, you know, watch the people run around, and we used to get big kicks out of it.
Were there usually any officers present around this, or was it, it was usually known that this was done, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty well accepted. I mean, everybody did it. We
yeah.
thought.
It, but the, nothing was said about it because of, well, the Vietnamese just weren't considered, they were gooks, right?
Right, nothing was said about it at all.
You're listening to the Winter Soldier Investigation over WBAI in New York City.
Mr. Bishop, we were told that you were in Vietnam from 68 to 69. I believe this was before President Nixon said we had any troops in Laos or Cambodia at all. It says here that you entered Cambodia in pursuit of enemy in between 68 and 69. Is this a true fact?
Right, that's correct. We were on Operation Taylor Common. We were up in the mountains. We were operating just above the Laotian border where Laos and Cambodia meet. We were making heavy contact up there. We had quite a few losses, and the unit I was with, and most of the operations we were holding were usually squad type or platoon type, because the area was so thick and we couldn't send in big units in there. And we were very close to the border, and very many times we were fired upon, and we would chase the enemy back, and you wouldn't know really how many grid squares you would go, but we would come back to the unit, and even though we knew we were close to Cambodia, we'd come back and the skipper would kind of get us all together and say, you know, like, you know, that was really a far out thing we did today, and just for your own information, we were in another country. And this was general knowledge at the time that we were going back and forth into Cambodia.
So you could say in effect that Mr. Nixon might possibly have been guilty of untruths in the matter that it was your company commander or platoon commander who told you that that you had been in another country.
That's correct. The platoon commander didn't really tell us to go in there, but once he found out that we were in there, because we report grid squares and our operations as we're moving, it was it was kind of a neat thing to do because we were in Cambodia, and I'll admit that about the Nixon thing, really.
Was there no distinction between the borders?
No, there's no distinction at all. It's all, you know, it's just, it's on your map. You can't tell, like, your border could be, you know, a tree line away, and you just don't know. You can't tell.
So you could have gone into Cambodia more than once then?
Oh, that's correct. We could have held patrols there. And if we weren't informed about exactly where we were, then we wouldn't have known.
Okay. Mr. Kenny, you mentioned earlier that shooting of unarmed civilians, wasn't it usually, you weren't supposed to do it except, or I'm sorry, you weren't supposed to shoot civilians at all unless you found out that they were armed. Could you go into this, explain how they explained the dead bodies if there were no arms on them?
Yes, in many instances, particularly Operation Brave Armada, which took place in Quang Nai province in the summer of 69, circumstances would come up where there would be a patrol walking along. A single person or a small group of persons would be sighted at a distance of anywhere from like 1 to maybe 500 meters. The standard procedure was to holler "Dung Lai," which is stop. A lot of times the civilians or Vietnamese couldn't hear at that distance, and if they didn't respond immediately, the procedure was to have the squad or platoon open up on these people. Upon approaching the bodies, it was usually found that these people had no weapons at all, that the only reason they hadn't stopped was because they either hadn't heard or were frightened. And in order to explain these civilian bodies, it was standard procedure to carry several extra fragmentation grenades in the field. And these would be planted on the bodies in order to make him a Viet Cong rather than a civilian.
Do you know if this went on in other units besides yourselves? I realize this is hearsay, but from things that other people have told you.
Yes, I understood from other people I've talked to that this was a fairly standard operating procedure.
And this was usually the platoon commander was present when this happened?
That's correct. On several instances, the platoon commander, a lieutenant, actually ordered this to be done.
All right. Was anything ever said to you about civilians? Well, they ran. What defined a VC when they were dead, when it was just a body count?
All right. Well, when a body was found, the general procedure was that if the body didn't have a weapon, it was a Viet Cong suspect. If a weapon could be planted on it, it became a Viet Cong. And if the body had any other equipment other than a weapon, that is, any piece of uniform or other equipment, it became a North Vietnamese. And this was the general criterion that our battalion used to discriminate.
I think it's about 5 minutes. Okay.
There's a program in Vietnam called the Chu Hoi program where they leaflet and they pass out these passes where the enemy, the NVA or the VC, with these passes can get safe conduct and be treated as respected human beings, not as POWs. But we have an instance, Mr. Camille, could you go into this, where Chu Hois were shot and their passes were rejected?
Right. We understood what the Chu Hois were for, but we were told that why should these people be able to shoot at us and then run, and when they got close to being captured, come out with it and get away with it. So when they came out with it, we just shot them.
Was this on orders, or was it...
It was on orders.
And what was done with the Chu Hoi pass after the person was killed?
Anytime a person was killed, if they had any identification or passes or anything that would get us in trouble, they were destroyed.
The platoon commander was present when this happened?
Definitely.
Right.
Mr. Nguyen Khi, it says here that there was torture of by POWs. Did you ever run into any Chu Hois or any type of prisoners trying to surrender?
Yes, I run into some prisoners that tried to surrender, but we were a roving battalion in Vietnam, and we went to a lot of different places, and mostly way out in the bush, up in the mountains, not close to any major Army or Marine bases or any bases such as this, and we didn't believe in Chu Hois. We're always brought back to our local platoon or CO position where we set up that night, interrogated.
Did you ever witness any of this interrogation?
Well, like I said before, we were mostly on the lines, and we could... I walked back... I'm not sure what province this was in, but I walked back to talk to the captain because it was going on a listening post that night, and I saw it was a young man, and he was being beaten by a Arvin interpreter that went came along with us, and he was being beaten, and I was told to leave the area.